Welcome to In This Case, a podcast from Hilti that goes behind the scenes at one of the most iconic brands in the world of construction. We'll talk to the people who make it all happen and ask them who, how, what if, and of course, why. Here's your host, Ali Hernandez.
Welcome back. By now in our series, you probably have a good understanding of why Hilti and the construction industry are focusing on sustainability. It's necessary for making our planet, society, and industry better. Hilti has identified two areas of focus in the push to reduce our environmental impact: carbon emissions and circularity. Today, we will take a deeper look at carbon emissions, which you'll also hear referred to as CO2 emissions. We'll explore their impact on the environment, how different sources of emissions are categorized, and how the industry is working together to reach ambitious carbon reduction goals. Let's start with the basics.
So basically, you and me, we breathe out CO2. That's just the natural cycle, and it's taken up by plants, and usually it's in equilibrium, so there's no problem for the planet.
This is Martin Schaefer, Global Sustainability Program Manager at Hilti.
Well, when we talk about CO2 emissions in general, it's the fossil CO2 which is causing the problem. So we are burning carbon that is millions of years in the ground in forms of fossil fuels, gas, oil, coal, and we are increasing the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, and that is causing the greenhouse gas effect. It's increasing the average temperature, but you see very uneven patterns on the globe. And we see that already. There's increased hurricane intensities, there's more tornadoes, there's stronger floods, there's the severe weather events that affect us. And this is essentially the effect, and we will see that on a global scale.
To prevent negative climate effects on a global scale, companies across industries are committing to standardized and ambitious carbon reduction goals. In Hilti's case, we have committed to science-based targets. Science-based targets provide companies with a clearly defined path to reduce emissions and limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit.
Science-based target is actually telling us what is the fair share, that if everybody would do that, we would reach the 1.5 degrees. So otherwise, you are kind of a bit in the dark. We want to reduce, but how much is enough? And we looked for standards around, and science-based targets seem to be the one that is now developing. And you see that also in the numbers. It's a doubling in committed companies over the last 4 years, now 4,700 worldwide, and going up.
Setting targets is the first step in an organization's carbon reduction journey. The next step is understanding from what operational processes this CO2 is being emitted. For this exercise, organizations can use the scope of emissions framework defined by the Greenhouse Gas Protocol.
Greenhouse Gas Protocol defines three scopes of CO2 emissions. And scope one is when we burn something. So you burn fossil fuels and there's CO2 emitted through an exhaust or through a chimney directly on your premises, on your car. So quite visually, there's an exhaust or a chimney. Scope two is when you import energies, namely electricity. So we use the electricity, but the chimney is at the power plant. So it's kind of an indirect emission, but we are causing that. And scope three is the whole value chain. So from the source products to the use of our products using electricity in the market, to transporting our goods, and first and foremost, the materials we buy in. So it's kind of the whole universe of the value chain, where we have strong overlaps as well with our customers and or our suppliers.
As part of Hilti's carbon reduction efforts, we are taking active measures within each scope.
Scope one, predominantly, it's the car fleet. And that's more than 90% from a global level is coming out of the car fleet, going around and visiting customers every day. So we shift from fossil burning fuel cars towards the electric, but if not fallback, full hybrid cars. And that dramatically reduces the emissions. And full hybrid is roughly 20% savings per car. And battery electric at zero on the operational emissions because we source green electricity already. So that's kind of the main thing, but driving out of fossil fuels in all locations that we have in terms of the buildings, that's the second one. On the scope two, that's basically it's coming down to electricity, and we buy green electricity worldwide already since 2020, also in the US. So we have a global contract with a broker buy this green electricity certificates from a global account and ensure that we use green electricity not only for the buildings, but also for the cars we charge. And on scope 3, there is a long list of measures of what we can do to decrease the emissions. We have to rely on the supply chain doing more, and we also need to do more than what was visible already to us last year to meet the target.
Scope 3, the emissions generated across the value chain, is where our industry faces the greatest challenge, but also the greatest opportunity to make an impact.
The largest share of our CO2 is coming from the value chain, and the largest part of that is our purchased goods and services. So it's basically all the steel, plastics, electronics going into our products, and we need to reduce the contained CO2 there. So it's not that easy. We need to rely on the value chain as well.
For the sake of simplicity, we can break the building value chain into 4 main buckets: manufacturing, designing, building, and operating. The materials sourced, specified, and used throughout the manufacturing, designing, and building phases of the supply chain are at the heart of Scope 3 emissions.
We can, you know, do some things to control our carbon footprint in our trailers and things like that. But those things in large part are drops in the bucket, because the real opportunity is in the materials.
This is Mike Bruskin, Director of Procurement at Turner Construction.
There's so many layers to it. Most often, Turner would be hiring subcontractors who are going to procure the materials and do the work on our projects. So the materials we're buying are not first tier, they're at least second tier. But then when you get into the manufacturer level, you could be 2, 3, 4, 5 or more steps down the supply chain before you get into the quarries or the people actually making the product. So the ability to truly understand the supply chain is dependent on your ability to get to the very bottom of the supply chain, to the end of it. You know, designers specify hopefully at least 3 manufacturers of products that we're allowed to use, and we have to go use one of them. Now, we do have a vision over time that as we know more about products, we will probably be in a position where we're going to tell clients that if the products the designer specified don't meet certain requirements, we're not going to buy them. And that's where we hope to get to. But there's things that designers can do today for example, reduced embodied carbon in concrete, which would make a big difference. But we don't get to pick that.
Mike just mentioned embodied carbon, which in the building industry refers to the carbon emissions arising from the manufacturing, transportation, installation, maintenance, and disposal of building materials. In contrast, operational carbon refers to the emissions due to building energy consumption. To explain the difference between embodied carbon and operational carbon in more detail, here's Rush Nathan, Sustainability Manager at Hilti North America.
So the relative impact of embodied carbon compared to operational carbon is much higher at the start of a building. And it probably takes about 15 to 20 years for operational carbon impact to overtake embodied carbon. So if you as an organization have a 2030 or a 2050 goal, you have to take embodied carbon and by extension, your scope 3 very seriously today. Also with operational carbon, you can lower that over time by implementing technology. That's a lot harder for embodied carbon. Once the building is completed, the embodied carbon is there for the life of the building, right? So when we talk about embodied carbon, there's 2 materials in construction that account for a large part of the embodied carbon, and that's concrete and steel. So actually, these 2 materials are responsible for more emissions than the entire agricultural sector. With concrete, the key ingredient that results in emissions is cement. And anytime you can replace the cement with other materials like fly ash or slag or even recycled concrete, you can actually lower the embodied carbon. And we're exploring partnership with customers to leverage our concrete sensor technology that we've deployed for many years. And we're looking to leverage the data that we get from these concrete sensors to change the concrete mix designs to more sustainable options. With steel, you know, we go to the philosophy of doing more with less, right? And it actually all starts with the way the support systems, for example, are designed. With our engineering services, with our BIM services, and our modular support systems, we're actually able to value engineer these designs, optimize them, reduce the weight. For example, with MEP supports, we're able to reduce the number of MEP supports. And as a result of that, we can help then reduce the carbon footprint. And in some cases with customers, we've actually been able to reduce that up to 40%, right? Beyond that, when you design upfront, you're able to be more accurate and you're able to reduce the amount of waste. And we all know in construction, there's a lot of waste generated, a lot of rework. And when you can sort of try to eliminate that waste and rework and get more prefabrication done, again, you can have then a positive impact on driving down the carbon footprint.
You know, brick and steel and concrete, as we've gone into the industrial age, that's the building material, less and less wood. And I think the change here is really understanding the impacts of these heavy materials on the environment.
That's Tenna Florian, partner at Lake Flato Architects.
Our role is definitely setting the vision early and making it integral to the project so that as it goes through from design into development and construction, that none of that's lost along the way. It's setting goals early, maintaining those goals, and, you know, making sure it's just integral to your specifications for in terms of building materials. So looking closely at wood and how that can be a structural material and still be durable and still have longevity and still be safe in a fire is really important, and how that wood captures carbon when it's in the forest and holds that carbon through its life cycle till the end of life.
We need products and opportunities that are scalable. There's a lot of great ideas out there. You know, we get phone calls from, you know, manufacturers of these great green products all the time. And my response to them, unfortunately, is I'm not your audience. If I loved your product and thought it was the best thing in the world, I still don't get to use it unless you can convince a designer to specify it.
There are certain materials that we've started to say, let's just take it out of our specs. Starting to think like that, where it's just not an option, is really important. It's hard because people are used to using certain materials all the time. But the more we as architects just say, no, we're going to stop, the more impact we'll have on the industry and really start to move the needle.
For Hilti and the industry to significantly reduce carbon emissions from scopes 1, 2, and especially 3, we must collaborate more closely across the value chain. A shift that is already occurring as manufacturers, designers, and builders approach building with a shared purpose of becoming more sustainable.
You know, I mean, Turner's engaged at its highest level, all the way through our CEO and president and our EVPs. So, I mean, what I'm most proud of is the ability to be willing to go into uncomfortable places, uncomfortable territories. This is not, I get on these calls every day, and I am completely overwhelmed because I don't know the answers. I'm an engineer. I like to know the answers. I do the calculation, I come up with the answer, and I implement. That's not the way this works. So there's a lot of vulnerability, and it's okay to be vulnerable. That's what I think is most interesting about this whole thing. Everybody is saying, let's learn from each other.
It's a lot that we have to think about, and it's a heavy burden in some ways. It is, but it's something that I think we're a thoughtful community. So the more we talk about it, the more things will hopefully change.
We are in the position to actually make an impact.
This is the third episode in our sustainability podcast series. Thanks for listening. In the next episode, we will look more closely at circularity in construction, including what it is and how the industry is using it to reduce its environmental impact. That's next time on In This Case.